Welcome to the Sustainable Value Chains podcast with EcoVadis. My name is Fergal Bann. Join me as I speak to senior business leaders building sustainable value chains across a wide range of industries. We explore key questions related to the drive to sustainability, from procurement to the role of technology and innovation, regulatory pressures and labor standards, transparency and risk management. We explore what is working, the latest thinking, and identify key lessons and insights. I'm very pleased today to welcome Louise Kellerup-Roper to the Sustainable Value Chains podcast with EcoVadis. Louise is the CEO of Volans, a think tank and advisory firm operating globally to help business leaders make sense of the emerging future and address global challenges. So thank you very much, Louise, for joining me today on the Sustainable Value Chains podcast with EcoVadis.
Thank you for having me. I'm really interested in our conversation coming up.
Excellent. So before we dive into a discussion about nature-based solutions, can you just tell us a little bit about your role at Volans, Louise?
So I'm the CEO at Volans, and that means I help give direction to the work we do. And I have the privilege of working with companies, pioneers really, both leaders and within companies that see the need to transform their own organizations and the wider system to a regenerative one. And as you might know, what we then do is try and provide them with the tools, the narratives, the networks, and sometimes the courage and imagination to make those in transitions that every company, every organization needs to make right now.
Very interesting. Can you tell us a little bit about the work you're doing at Volans on nature-based solutions and maybe some of the research areas that interest you?
Sure. So at Volans, we tend to try and be looking a bit further into the future than lots of people are. And that said, nature is one of the things that a lot of people are talking a lot about now, because we've realized, I think, as a sustainability professionals, that it is completely intertwined with the climate crisis, the crisis of nature. And it's really key to solving the climate crisis and multiple other crises that are going on in our world right now. So we're leaning quite heavily into nature, both in terms of research, and in terms of practicing, figuring out what are the practices that business can start adopting to get the most out of nature, but also to provide the most back to nature. There's really a clear symbiosis between benefits to nature and benefits to business that we are just not seeing realized at the moment.
Well, there's certainly a growing interest in nature-based solutions, but they can be difficult to define. How would you describe nature-based solutions in simple terms?
Sure. So I guess there's just zooming out for one second, if that's okay. So I think there's nature and then there's nature-based solutions. Do you mind if I just pop into nature briefly first, which it seems obvious, but it's interwoven into everything we do, see, we breathe. We are part of nature. And yet, for a long while, the way we've set up our economy and society is as if we weren't both part of and dependent on nature. So I think that's just as one bit. Nature-based solutions then, which you're right, that people get confused and when we're trying to define that, is really talking about biodiversity, species, and ecosystems. And I'm not a scientist, but sort of for me, remembering back to biology lessons in school, we know that all species are interdependent and there are these local ecosystems that we were taught then, and they are now in crises with 1.2 million species under threat. And we've lost about 70% of species in the last, I guess, 50 years. So that loss is accelerating. So just a little bit on nature. And really, when we think about nature-based solutions, it's about making things better. So restoring the health to soils below the ground, the plants above ground, wildlife, life in rivers, lakes, seas. And the reason we're calling them solutions, not just restoring nature, is because there's a wealth of other benefits that can be unlocked for climate and for resilience and for people. So for example, I think a really, really neat example would be flood and droughts can be stemmed through nature-based solutions around natural flood protection solutions. So you get the biodiversity coming back, you're restoring nature, but actually you're also preventing flooding or droughts or extreme heat, depending on what you use. That makes sense?
Absolutely. Can you explain how nature-based solutions have developed over time, Louise, and why they are becoming increasingly important for both businesses and the environment?
Okay, so maybe I might take a step back, but if we say that nature-based solutions are actions to protect or sustainably manage or restore natural ecosystems whilst also addressing other challenges like climate change or health or food and water security, then we say, right, so that's, for example, using tree planting in coastal areas as flood defenses rather than putting up a wall. So that, and I guess that's that tells you the some of the development. We used to say, oh, there's a flood, we're going to put up concrete and put up a wall. So not a nature-based solution. More and more, it's become apparent that nature-based solutions are more resilient and they then help build back biodiversity and other benefits. So they're sort of win-win-win, because not only do you retain the water, you help with nitrogen and carbon, and you make the area more resistant to floods. So I guess that it's, there's been a mindset shift along with the science, because a long time we did not see restoring biodiversity or ecosystems as anything to worry about. You know, we, when I say we, sort of the general mass of mainstream thinking, whereas now it's become really apparent that it's really at the core of just about everything we do. And there's been a really interesting recognition around the amount of money sort of economically. And this is, of course, where other people get triggered. The collapse of certain ecosystems has been a global decline in GDP by, or would expect to be a global decline in GDP by 2.7 trillion by 2030, is what the World Bank says. So by 2030, the collapse will have added up decline in GDP, which tends to be how people measure growth and economic thriving, which not necessarily is the right, well, it's definitely not the right measure, but up by that measure, we are losing money because ecosystems are collapsing. So suddenly, so we've, you know, as you say, the framing is lots of reasons are pointing us to nature-based solutions are important for economics, for life, for climate, and so on. If you think that half of all the emissions or greenhouse gas emissions are absorbed by land or ocean, i.e. nature, so the more we deforest, the less carbon can be absorbed, the bigger problem we have with climate change and heating and then all the knock-on effects of that in terms of climate migration and so on. So it's suddenly all roads point to nature suddenly, I would say. However, it's still really nascent in terms of what we're doing.
Now, I know Volans has been doing some work with EcoVadis on a new report exploring nature-based solutions. Can you tell us something about the questions that you're exploring here?
So we've been doing some work with EcoVadis on nature-based solutions, and the initial work really shows that companies are not sure how to deal with nature-based solutions in general, what to do about it. They are starting to explore that. And the other questions that we're looking at really is the relationship between business and nature and how much benefit business would get by restoring nature. So that's some of the work we're currently doing. What will that take both for leadership teams and boards to really start engaging with this, and then exploring certain deeper pieces into some of those benefits we talked about, like human health. It's really, really clear that health is also linked to access to nature. And as the population of the world moves into more and more cities, how do you maintain nature in a sensible way? So those are some of the really interesting benefits and questions that we've started working on.
From your research, how do the long-term cost benefits and resilience of nature-based solutions compare to traditional infrastructure approaches, Louise?
So nature is a complex, dynamic living system. So if you are comparing it to artificial or sort of man-made infrastructure, you have to remember how that they operate on completely different principles. Nature gains its effectiveness of, you know, millions of years of evolution. And if you manage nature to work with it, you have much more reliable, more cost-effective and long-term outcomes than any other types of solution. You know, pollination is a great example. So we talk about Voland sometimes as being pollinators, and bees are a lot more efficient than manual labor if you're pollinating flowers. You know, end of. And it's more resilient because you maintain biodiversity and diversity rather than linear optimization of one aspect of the system that tends to happen when you're looking at man-made infrastructures. So it is for sure, if you work with nature as it is, it will be much more cost-effective, much more resilient and long-term than man-made. And I think the concerns really come because we are so attached to and used to working industrial management approaches. We tend to think of systems as mechanical, where, you know, like a car engine, where something goes wrong and you can fix it and you know what to do and it's all cause and effect. Nature is not just complicated, but it is complex and it is moving. And so it does have to be managed differently. Again, back to, it does require a different mindset, but it is the mindset that our work shows that is needed anyway to get us out of these multiple convergence of crises that we find ourselves in at the moment.
Very interesting. How do nature-based solutions align with long-term sustainability goals? And in what specific industries or regions have you seen the greatest impact?
Well, so I think the pattern of how companies have been implementing nature-based solutions tells something about where they're most beneficial, most obviously beneficial, because I think we've established they're beneficial sort of globally, but also very much to local communities. So I guess the industry that has been furthest ahead are the ones in agriculture. So for example, Danone has really pushed on regenerative models of agriculture to protect the soil, empower farmers, promote animal welfare, etc. And I'm picking Danone because it's a big, very known company, not because they're the best at this, but those companies that are dependent on soil and on nature really directly have been first, of course. And that's why they've gone that direction. I think there's some other examples. I believe one, I think an EcoVadis client is Pernod Ricard, have done some really interesting things where you can see that that's been the sort of needs-based. That's really obvious. There are also some other, if I pick again, bigger companies, the Danish company Ørsted, Danish energy producer, they've made some quite serious targets around net positive biodiversity impacts. And some really interesting examples of nature-based solutions around their offshore wind again. So they didn't need to do that, but they've made it part of their business to restore nature because they want to continue to be a global sustainability leader, really. So that's sort of strategic. But it's not, again, and I think that's really important, we're not seeing it at the core of business strategies. It's still, I'm going to say, an extra one because they want to be sustainable. So it's quite interesting.
Why do you think businesses find it more difficult to account for the biodiversity benefits compared to carbon, where there's been a lot of progress? What specific changes are required?
So I think the business case is much more complicated than, for example, carbon. Not less at all, but much more complicated because biodiversity isn't one number you can put in a spreadsheet. And I would say that we suffer from spreadsheet capitalism, that if you can put it in a simple spreadsheet that it looks like money, which carbon can really easily do, then that's easier to, you can measure it and then you can make it part of your accounting. We haven't found a way of making nature and biodiversity benefits so simple. And so one of two things has to happen. Either there is, and some people are doing this, trying to simplify nature and biodiversity benefits into something that we could put in a similar spreadsheet, or, which I think is a more interesting solution, maybe we need to start figuring out how we value things that aren't simple, that aren't necessarily easily fitted into a spreadsheet or a financial report. And that, you know, that's quite big, but that is something about the mindset shift we need to see if we are going to avert these many crises that are facing us, both the environmental, so both climate, nature, and the societal crises is that shift in how we value things and how we measure that. And so to me, that's a bigger question, which we can have a whole different discussion about if you'd like. But that's one of the reasons why it hasn't been accepted as quickly, I guess, as carbon. It's much more complicated.
Yes. And of course, there are many converging initiatives around ESG trying to put some kind of figures on these environmental variables. And I suppose it's good to bear in mind, it did take some time for the mainstream financial accounting system to develop. So we're on a journey here and it's unfolding at the moment.
Sure. And we should, you know, acknowledge that there are some more sort of frameworks and tools coming. So the Task Force for Nature-Based Financial Disclosures, so TNFD, the SBTN, UNCOR, I think are the most prominent and sort of credible frameworks to start assessing and measuring impact and dependencies on nature and starting to create sort of nature strategies as a company. And that's definitely where people should start, in my mind.
Right. Very, very thought-provoking. Now, based on your experience in designing and implementing nature-based solutions, Louise, what guidance can you provide to companies that want to use these solutions tailored to specific contexts and goals?
No, I'll be a bit more practical on this one. I guess you have to start really by understanding context. And all nature-based solutions are based in a place. So it goes a little bit to the principles of regenerative living systems again. They are based on context and on place. So you have to be really clear on what that is. You can't generalize. So we've again got very used to the global generalization. We think we can take a model and put it anywhere. That's not the case. So you have to be really clear on your context. You have to be clear on the broader operating system and look at the entire value chain or value cycle. So for example, what is the state of the nature at the sites you operate? That's what I would suggest every company should be starting to think about. What's the state of nature, where you operate, where your suppliers operate, for your customers? Because, again, going back to what we talked about earlier, nature can provide both resilience and safety and health benefits very, very easily. So if you look across that value chain and you look across the local sites that you operate on or that your value chain is spread across, then you can say, okay, so second question, what are the contributions you could make which would make the most positive impact for that value chain? And which of these changes should also improve your own organization's resilience in the future? So I think it's really simple. It's analysis of what's going on, which is not, I said simple. That's not necessarily simple, but you know, there are great measures for looking at what is the biodiversity, how healthy are the ecosystems. You do that, then you can figure out where is it that doing something, and often it's not that complicated, it's not necessarily expensive to make a huge positive impact, not just on that local ecosystem, but again, having other health impacts or resilience impacts, which again, lowers risk commercially in the long term and so on. So then you can start doing that. And I would definitely then use the lens of your company's resilience. And again, many companies are beginning to come to nature because it's providing us a risk now. You know, the climate risk from lack of nature is more easily measured financially now because it is just growing, which is quite frightening. You know, insurance is going up. Investors are looking at this. Again, those are some of the pressures we see businesses coming under. So it isn't just a nice to have. They really need to start beginning that journey. And it begins with map your landscape and understands what your role is in that system, what your potential contributions could be, where you are dependent on nature. I remember a few years ago, there wasn't enough water in the Ruhr in Germany for boats to come through. And there were several really large industrial companies that lost a lot of money that summer. And at that time, again, shows a little bit about how long I've been around, people weren't linking that directly to the climate at risk. We are now. And figuring out how do you secure your organization's future by investing in nature and nature-based.
I think, yeah, it's interesting. We take for granted to some extent where we are now with climate and carbon, but that's been a journey as well. And this question of putting a value on nature and thinking about it in a very holistic way it's a relatively new way of looking at one's relationship with nature.
Yes. No, I think that's exactly right. And one of the dangers is that because carbon has been on an earlier learning curve, there is a tendency to have sort of carbon tunnel vision, where you just look at carbon, again, because we now know how to do that. And it looks very familiar. So we haven't had to change that much. And how we deal with nature will be more complicated. But also, I would argue, it will be more beneficial to all of us.
Right. Yes. Now, a question which comes up a lot of the time with respect to sustainability initiatives of all kinds is, what is the business case? Now, what do you see as the business case for nature-based solutions, Louise? How should companies approach this question?
I would say there are ways of indicating that the business case is good, but I think what's interesting about nature is it raises some fundamental questions about how we make a business case. And as the risk goes up, the business case becomes easily more recognizable. And I think we're seeing that. However, until I think there is that fundamental different way of looking, well, what does a business case mean? Do we need a business case if there isn't a space to conduct our business because we've been waiting and not taking care of nature? It's a lovely book out called There Is No Profit on a Dead Planet, or something to that effect, which it's a little bit like that. And there is a need to address, well, what does a business case really mean? What's the longevity of it, short-term, long-term, and so on? That said, many, many businesses are now finding ways to create the business case in the shorter term, at least for specific projects as you go forward. I think that they're more and more clear. And I should actually also say there are sort of more mechanisms, sort of market mechanisms or regulatory mechanisms like biodiversity credits you can buy. And in the UK, there's a new biodiversity net gain regulation, which starts then underpinning pricing for nature-based solutions. And as they develop, the payments and the business case becomes stronger. At the moment, each country is developing its own version of how to support create the structures to support this. So understanding how they operate is quite important, but actually you don't need to look at those in order to get started.
As companies start exploring nature-based solutions, what are the most common challenges they face when integrating them into their business strategies, and how can they overcome these obstacles?
Yeah. So, and I would hope, by the way, they would integrate nature-based solutions into their broader business strategy, like really into business, not just sustainability. But first is map your landscape, both literally, metaphorically. Map it out and understand as much as you can about your contribution and where you depend on nature and where nature might depend on you. Then identify key stakeholders, especially the one closest to the ground in the places you are. You cannot do this if it's not place-based. You can't do it in general. And collaborate with those people on the ground to figure out where most difference can be made by restoring nature and what the benefits are and to whom. Again, going all the way through that is when you suddenly find that there are benefits you didn't even think about when you set out. And some of them are so strong that other companies might pay you for them.
Is this what are called co-benefits?
Exactly, co-benefits. Nature-based solutions tend to have lots of co-benefits, but you can't see them until you do the work. And so I would hope that whether it's regulation or voluntary, that we start seeing a bigger trend to mapping what our impacts are on nature across our value chain, and what the impact of nature on our value chain is. Where is it we need clean water, or our employees need fresh air, all those things, they're part of it. So if every company started mapping and looking at it, we would discover so many co-benefits, and we'd start breaking down the silos that often prevents us from funding the right solutions, and we could collaborate to do so for everybody's benefit.
How crucial is stakeholder engagement for successful implementation of nature-based solutions?
So as mentioned, nature and nature-based solutions can be complicated. The good news is that collaboration around this is essential anyway. So we don't have to know everything. There are stakeholders, local and more global stakeholders around nature-based solutions and creating the right coalitions are essential and will really prove some of the co-benefits, will also lower the cost of nature-based solutions in the short term, even while spreading the benefits in the longer term.
Looking to the future, Louise, what emerging trends or potential disruptions should companies be prepared for?
I think it's really clear that nature-based solutions, if you start implementing your plan now, will be a lot less costly and easier than if you wait until regulation comes. And regulation will no doubt have to come in this area in a much stronger way than what we're seeing now. So it will pay to do the work now, not to put it off. It will just be more complicated and more expensive.
How do you see AI impacting the field of nature-based solutions, Louise? What specific applications or transformations might we expect?
I think it has to be said that technology can really, really help us in this work around nature, because AI and other technologies can help the mapping and us understanding the state of nature as we move forward, which again, step one, what is going on, and can start looking at predictions of, if we take this action, what will the benefits or the payoffs be short-term, long-term, across a whole host of things. So I think AI is going to be absolutely crucial in accelerating nature-based solutions and biodiversity restoration and ecosystems restoration as fast as we need it.
Finally, can I ask, what's at stake here if nature-based solutions don't become widely adopted or fail to reach a significant level of implementation in businesses?
So I think the nature is absolutely essential to life, our lives. And unless we recognize the value of nature to us, not just in general as human beings, but to our companies, and we start really defining the symbiosis between nature and our human activities and business activities, we will not solve any of the crises that are facing us. Not the climate crisis, not the poverty crisis, not the sort of societal fragmentation crisis. Nature has a role to play across all of them. It's cheaper to do, I would argue, more complicated to do, but even the process of doing it is going to be essential for whether human beings thrive on this planet in the, unfortunately, not that distant future.
Thanks, Louise. That really underscores the gravity of the situation. Thank you for offering such valuable insights on how nature-based solutions contribute to biodiversity, climate adaptation, and improved sustainability outcomes for businesses.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the Sustainable Value Chains podcast with EcoVadis. We hope you found it interesting, and we'd love if you could share it with your colleagues and leave a review. If you'd like to find out more about EcoVadis, please visit ecovadis.com.